Welcome to Shattering Myths, the program which is devoted to the largest segment of society, to those who have come to realize that the world's political, religious, economic, and media institutions are corrupt, that they're counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. We hope that over time, a majority also come to realize that all of the world's military establishments are also corrupt and counterproductive. Our phone number, if you would like to participate in this discussion, is toll-free, 877-300-7645. First story is Dateline, Indonesia. I said in a program about a week ago that you ought not fly any airline managed by an Islamic country, and that there's a problem with maintenance, there's a problem with compliance with regulations, there's a problem with piloting, with pilot training and pilot decision making. And all of those are a direct derivative of Islam. Islam is a religion that encourages thievery, deceit, bearing false witness, and literally misleading people. It's a religion so dumb that you have to be ignorant and or irrational to have any confidence in it. And so you ought to be careful. There is a reason that it has been two Malaysians and an Indonesian flight that have succumbed to great tragedy here recently. Now, in this particular story, the latest is that the Indonesian AirAsia flight wasn't permitted to even make that flight. And it has subsequently, because it is without the proper permits, seen all of its flights between the destinations that led to the crash curtailed. The Air Ministry has issued directives ordering that not only are all flights suspended, but this is also interesting. All airlines are to provide pilots with up-to-date weather reports before they take off. Now, a directive that states that tells you that there's a serious problem here. People just aren't thinking. I mean, as a pilot, I would never get in an airplane without an up-to-date weather briefing. And it doesn't have to be provided for me. I'll go get it. Now, in the airlines, they actually provide it. But no properly trained pilot would ever get in an airplane and fly it without a current weather briefing. And the very fact that they're now requiring this tells you that it did not happen before. And therein lies your problem, and hundreds of people are dead as a result. Currently, they say it's up to the pilot and co-pilot to research and evaluate flying conditions before departing. Now, that happens to be the case throughout general aviation. Until you get into the airlines, it is the pilot's responsibility and the co-pilot's responsibility, if there's more than one crew member, to obtain weather briefings. It is an absolute requirement. You do not even think of getting in an airplane and piloting that airplane without a weather briefing. Under any circumstances, no matter the capability of your airplane, no matter the qualifications of the pilot. And so, to say that currently it's under the pilot's responsibility, that's the case with all flying. Now, in the airlines, the pilots are typically convenienced, and there is a flight department that provides the pilots with their weather briefing. But even though that is the case, the technology today is so vastly superior that the old idea of getting a weather briefing via a a facsimile or a printout from the flight department at the airport versus going on a PC, going on your iPad, and actually looking at the weather conditions, being able to drill down into turbulence and icing, wind shear, being able to look at the NEXRAD radar, being able to evaluate cloud tops, wind direction, wind movement at various altitudes, all of the kinds of things that have a very significant influence on the flight. And in this particular case, it may have been icy level. That you're vastly better off doing that on an iPad or, you know, any convenient PC device or tablet in the cockpit of the airplane. In fact, you can do it on your smartphones. We all have the application. It's very inexpensive and unbelievably effective. And to think that a pilot wouldn't do that, that tells you that you've got pilots that just flat out don't care anymore or are incapable of exercising good judgment. This is a problem that is pervasive in Islam. Icing is now thought to have contributed to the crash and may have been a triggering factor. Now, if the pilots, and this is what we were told, said they want to change altitude based on weather, then that would have been the wrong decision. You don't change altitude because of a storm that lies ahead. You change course. You veer 10 or 20 degrees to the right or left of your present course to go around the weather as opposed to try to climb above it. But if the problem was icing and you were in icing conditions and you had encountered severe icing, then a climb can be and often is the right course of action. However, because you can get, by the way, you know, the issue is that there are certain altitudes where the temperature is well below freezing, but there's moisture in a liquid form that just has not yet frozen yet in the atmosphere, and when it hears the it touches the supercooled airframe, the aluminum airframe, it immediately freezes as ice. And you get a lot of that, and it builds up quickly. And if the airplane takes on an inch or two of ice, it isn't going to fly. It loses all, it not only gains too much weight, but it loses its aerodynamics. So, there are procedures for solving that problem. But particularly on the leading edges of the wings and the tail, they all have either pneumatic or, in the case of airlines, they have heated wings, hot wings. And the opening to the jets, the openings to the leading edge of the wings, leading edge of the tail, are all heated with the bypass air from the engines. And so it will prevent ice from building up on the leading edges, which means the airplane is still aerodynamically capable of flying. But the fact is that if you were building up ice like that, you don't ask the controller to say, you know, I'd like to climb for weather. You say, encountering severe icing, climbing now, and you're just, you tell them, you're not asking. You announce the reason is icing, and you explain that you're climbing. Period. And you say, you know, climbing to avoid ice will, you know, advise when clear. But that's not what occurred. So, again, we have mistakes in judgment. By the way, the tower, according to this article, the control tower has also been suspended. Now, typically, you would not have a control tower dealing with an aircraft once it left the aerodrome, the area around the airport. So what in the world you had a control tower talking to an aircraft in cruise it's at 30,000 feet, tells me we have a screw-up of monumental proportions going on in Malaysia and Indonesia related to their management of aircraft. Islam is not, however, the only source of inappropriate and deadly behavior. In New Delhi, 5 men were arrested in connection with the abduction and rape of a young Japanese woman who was held captive for 12 days as she was systematically gang raped. The woman was lured to the Gaya district in the state of Bihar, the site of one of India's holiest Buddhist temples, from Calcutta by a man posing as a tour guide. When they arrived at the destination, two others were waiting. They took her at gunpoint and raped her over and over over the course of 12 days. Now, there are lots of rapes in America. You know, the greatest prevalence of them is in the U.S. military. And there are rapes that are perpetrated at gun or knife point. But it is very rare to have a gang rape where there are numbers of people who have plotted, as they did here, what they were going to do well in advance over a significant geographic area, and where they, as a group, hold the victim hostage for days. This is a cultural problem when this occurs. It's the same cultural problem that manifests itself when the young girl was raped and then bludgeoned to death in the New Delhi area while no one came to her aid, and where there were also 5 or 6 young men that participated. This is a problem in Hinduism. This problem is also manifest throughout India now, with young girls being stripped naked in front of the entire community and then being raped by the community for violations of the sexual codes of the community, typically for not being willing to stay within the community and to be sold as a slave into marriage, typically to some older individual that the woman has no interest in having a relationship with. Dateline Nigeria. Boko Haram militants, these would be fundamentalist Muslims, kidnapped 40 boys and young men. These would be 40 children and teenagers in a raid on a village in northeastern Nigeria. People who fled Malari, that's the name of the village, in Borno State, and arrived at the state capital, said that the boys had been taken on New Year's Eve. Last year, Boko Haram abducted this says 200, but the actual number was 200 in one kidnapping, 250 in the boarding school. And then they kidnapped 50, 100, 200, 150, to the point where when you add all of the kidnapping of little girls by this fundamentalist Islamic group over the course of last year, the numbers total about 750 to 1,000. Every one of those girls has been systematically raped every day. Gang raped in many cases. Every day. Day after day. Two were left for dead, naked, tied up to a tree, and they told us of their plight. Most of them are still captive, still being consistently raped every day. Day after day. All as a consequence of Islam. Boko Haram, this article says, has been waging an insurgency since 2009. To call what they're doing waging an insurgency says that whoever wrote this article has no concept of the brutality of this organization, of what fundamentalist Islam has done. They go into village after village. They typically murder the older men and women. They often burn them alive in their homes. They torch the markets in each of these villages, burning them to the ground. They then take boys and girls, take the boys, and they turn them into jihadists, telling them indoctrinating them on Islam, and then telling them that they need to become killers for the organization. Boys as young as 7, 8, 9 years old, given automatic weapons and perpetrating grotesque acts, often sitting down and killing their own parents on the orders of the Islamic leadership. And the girls are told or turned into sex slaves. It's a reprise of what Muhammad did 1,400 years ago. In the latest incident, the resident said that the Islamic gunman came into the village in pickup trucks and then ordered all males to come out and listen to a sermon. Listen to a sermon. What do you think the sermon was on? Hinduism? No, I don't think so. Buddhism? No, probably not. Protestant Christianity? No, don't think they were talking about the Reformation. How about Orthodox Christianity? Probably not. No, the sermon they wanted them to listen to was on Islam. Not a extremist view of Islam. There's only one Islam. It's the Islam of the Quran and Hadith, the Islam of Muhammad, of which they are an exemplar. They had them come out and listen to a religious sermon. They were then taken into a nearby forest. They were kidnapped. They'll be turned into killers. Last month, Boko Haram stormed another village in the same neighborhood. 33 villagers were killed on that day. 200 more were kidnapped. This is a religion that is inhumane, uncivilized, repulsive, perpetrating crimes that ought not be tolerated by people, certainly ought not be excused by them. Islam is a criminal enterprise. It needs to be criminalized. It needs to be exposed, to be condemned, and to be isolated. Dateline is Libya. Masked Islamic gunmen in northern Libya have kidnapped 13 Coptic Christian workers from Egypt just a week after 7 others were abducted. You see, you have a problem in Islam. Muslims don't work. So to get work done, they have to import those who are not Muslims who are willing to work. In this case, the Muslims in Libya offered jobs to 13 Coptic Christian workers. And then when they arrived, they abducted or returned to shattering myths and continue to chronicle a world destroyed by its religions. So masked Muslims in northern Libya have kidnapped 20 Coptic Christian workers, 13 today, 7 a week ago. Eyewitnesses in the city of Sirte said that the Islamist militants went into the residential complex late at night. You know, a combination, doing their dirty work, armed, as a gang, late at night, and masked, all tells you a great deal about them. And the fact, of course, that they hunted down Christians tells you most of what you need to know about Islam. It operates in the dark of night. It wears masks to hide one's identity. You know, you don't try to hide your identity unless you're doing something that's despicable. You know, you rob your bank, you wear a mask. They were armed, attacking defenseless, unarmed civilians. That's the way that Islam operates. It cannot win a straight-up war. I'm not sure Muslims have ever fought a straight-up war. I mean, even during the Crusades, you didn't have even countries there. You had wannabe marauders fighting armies. The wannabe marauders, the knights, and the like. It wasn't as if France and England declared war on the Ottoman Empire. As we move, though, to today's world, we still have Muslims in the dark of night wearing masks, armed against defenseless civilians. And in the nature of Islam, hunting down those who do not submit to their perverted religion. The Christians were separated from the Muslims before reportedly being handcuffed and kidnapped. It's the latest in a series of attacks on Egyptian Christians throughout Libya. And what are the cops going to do? And while I'm opposed to the Christian religion, and the Copt is a pretty moronic corruption of Christianity on top of all of that, what are they going to do? I mean, when the Mubarak was in charge of Egypt, they lived as second-class citizens, but they were allowed to live. When the Muslim Brotherhood took control of Egypt, they lost all of their rights. When the Sisi military junta took charge, the Muslim Brotherhood members blamed the Christians for the coup, and to a large degree, they participated in the coup. They put their support behind Sisi, and the military would not protect them, and the Muslim Brotherhood members attacked them, and many, if not most, of their churches were burned. They lost their homes. And so where are they going to go? They went into Libya in hopes to find work because they can't work in Egypt. And in Libya, which is nothing but a hellhole for Islamist militancy, they're being kidnapped, tortured. They had a list, this article says, of full names of Christians in the building. While checking IDs, Muslims were left aside and the Christians were grabbed. Mr. Aziz, who is the head of the AP, or I guess he was just an individual talking to the AP news agency, said that he survived because he heard his friends screaming and didn't open the door. I'm still in my room waiting for them to take me. I want to die with them. That's the thing about Copt Christians. In fact, the hierarchy of the Copt Church constantly brags about how martyrdom and suffering is the very thing that makes their church. That without martyrdom, without suffering, the religion would fail. And that when people are being martyred and sacrificed, it is what causes them to prevail. Here's a man, Copt Christian. He says, I'm in my room. I'm just waiting for them. I want to die with my friends. A sense of martyrdom. One of the things that was the most interesting for me as I was studying the history of Rome and the transition from the Empire of Rome to the Roman Catholic Church is this whole myth of the martyrdom of Christians and of Christians being burned alive to illuminate Nero's garden, and the myth of Christians being fed to the lions as entertainment for pagan Romans, and of the great Christian persecutions that were ended by Constantine. None of it occurred. It's just not true. It's all fabricated. It's all fabricated by the church. The Roman officials had no interest in hunting down Christians. Constantine didn't convert to Christianity, never issued an edict in favor of Christianity over other Roman pagan religions. The actual historical evidence from the time says that Christians were so desirous of wanting to be martyrs that the Romans said, there's a cliff. Why don't you go jump off it? This notion of dying to prove one's faith is a common denominator between Christianity and Islam. It's one that ought to cause people to be circumspect, to think it through. I hear sermons from Christians all the time talking about that they wish that their fellow Christians had the same level of faith and commitment to their faith as do Muslims who are willing to die as suicide bombers. I mean, that's real commitment to the one's faith. And you think about that. And then you see, you know, a cop saying, I'm still in my room. I want to be kidnapped. I want to die with my fellow cops. And the sense of proving one's faith by being willing to die for it just seems so odd, so stupid, so moronic. Why would you want to die for your faith? Why would your act of sacrificing your own life prove the validity of your faith? I mean, it tells me that all that you're proving is that you've been indoctrinated to the point that you're no longer able to think rationally or to make informed choices, moral decisions. This incident came just a few days after seven other Coptic Christians from Egypt were reportedly abducted at fake checkpoints as they tried to leave the city. There was also an attack on the home of an Egyptian Coptic doctor in the same town in early December, in which he and his wife were murdered. Local reports say that the couple's daughter was also found dead after being abducted and raped. Libya is home to a very large community of both Muslim and Coptic Christians, with most working in the construction sector. Well, Libya is home to a very large community of Muslims. There is a very tiny minority of Coptic Egyptians living in Egypt. Now, a large community. I mean, you're talking about thousands amongst millions. Yeah, okay. But a large community, as if we're dealing with a significant percentage of the population. No, and Libya is 99% Islamic. This article says, which is true, that the country has been plagued by instability and infighting since the toppling of Colonel Muammar Gaddafi in 2011. Well, plagued by instability, there is a complete lack of stability. The country is in utter and complete chaos. And infighting, the only force in Libya now are rival Islamic militias. That's all there is. All armed to the teeth because the United States, through Qatar, supplied them with all manner of weapons. And America made a bad situation under Muammar Gaddafi infinitely worse by the moronic decision promoted by both the Abominator and Senator John McClown to bomb Muammar Gaddafi and to arm the fundamentalist Muslim Mujahideen. And it's amazing that neither the Abominator nor McClown want to talk about the disaster that they caused by the American military intervention, both directly and indirectly, in Libya. They were certainly on their soapbox talking about how this was, we need to side with and arm, bomb on behalf of these rebels. Oh, they're freedom fighters. We need to protect them from the military and the abuse of Muammar Gaddafi. And look what we created. A hellhole. Total anarchy. A place where marauding Muslim terrorists not only perpetrate such crimes as we're reading here, but also arm organizations like Boko Haram, like the Islamic State. They've become the principal marketplace for jihadist weaponry throughout the Middle East. We made a bad situation infinitely worse by the stupidity of and the lack of morality and judgment of the Abominator and John McClane. It is what America does these days. And while the conditions aren't as obvious in Afghanistan, it is the ultimate fate of Afghanistan. That's exactly what's going to happen as a result of George Bush's stupidity. It is what has already happened in Iraq. It is what has already happened in Syria. American stupidity. Intervening in countries where bad situations exist and leaving them in far worse shape, infinitely worse shape. Our maneuvers around the world have become universally counterproductive. This article says rival militias now control most of the country, including the two largest cities, Tripoli and Benghazi, and that Sirte has become a safe haven for Islamic fighters.
Yeah.
Rival Mujahideen. There are no peaceful, democratic rebels. There's no free Libyan army. All you have is rival Islamic gangs, all armed to the teeth, courtesy of Qatar and the United States, in control of the country. Oh, what a mess we have made. This next story should cause the leadership of France, of Russia, of China, and all of those countries that were part of the 15-nation Security Council, who voted in favor of forcing Israel to withdraw from Judea and Samaria, to reward Fatah, the PLO, with their own state for a mythical people, the so-called Palestinians. It ought to cause them to cringe, to vomit for having done so. Now, that's if they were moral. That's if they were informed. That's if they were rational. That's if they knew anything of the history or the behavior of these Muslims. But let me share with you what occurred over the weekend. The political party of the Palestinian Authority and President Mahmoud Abbas, that would be Fatah. Fatah is actually the political party of the PLO. The PLO is still very active. Its charter calls for the utter destruction of Israel. And it was the world's most ruthless terrorist organization under Yasser Arafat. Decades before anyone even heard of Al-Qaeda, the PLO was perpetrating intifadas and suicide bombings on Israelis. Well, that political party, Fatah, which is the lone political party of the Palestinian Authority, it's a one-party institution, which means it's dictatorial, posted a image on their homepage of Fatah, of the Palestinian Authority, posted an image on their homepage that was a pile of skulls, a mountain of skulls, with Jewish stars etched on each of the skulls, and their flag on top of them. It's kind of like the Iwo Jima monument, where you had the Marines planting their flag on the Japanese base. Well, this was on the flag was flying on a mountain that was comprised of Jewish skulls. That's Fatah. An Israeli government spokesman called it despicable. Well, okay, yeah, it was despicable. Along with the images posted to the Facebook page of the Fatah party are the words, "Lingering on your skulls." Lingering on your skulls. The whole reason that the Dome of the Rock exists, the whole reason that Alaska Mosque exists, is to linger over the site of Yahweh's temple in Jerusalem so that they can lord over Jews. That's the Muslim mindset, is that Islam and Allah are superior to Judaism and to Yahweh. And that they, therefore, are going to kill and then boast over Jewish skulls. It is like Muhammad at the Battle of Badr. For those who do not know, Muhammad, in his first terrorist raid, it's the first act of the Islamic era, is the attack on Badr, and it's really not a battle, it was a terrorist raid. Muhammad came down with men under arms to attack a civilian caravan that was unarmed, and he killed many men. And those he killed, robbing their caravan, he then mutilated, cutting their bodies into pieces, decapitating them. And then Muhammad loitered and lingered over their decapitated remains, gloating all night. That's exactly what this picture depicted. When contacted by CNN on Friday, a member of Fatah's Central Committee disavowed the image. It's posted on their homepage. But, you know, Islam is all about deceit. And he said, Fatah did not design this image, Mahmoud al-Abdul said. The person who posted it to Fatah's page is currently being asked to remove it. The image and the text do not reflect the opinions of Fatah. The image was then pulled from the page. Muslims lie. They lie and they kill.